are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Tuesday, June 18th, 2019. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, senior reporter at GNO Media, Anna Merlin, on the Republic of Lies, American conspiracy theorists and their surprising rise to power. Also on the program today, Trump claims ICE planning to round up millions of undocumented immigrants. Meanwhile, U.S. to send at least 1,000 more troops to the Middle East for defensive purposes. Meanwhile, our acting Secretary of Defense is being investigated by the FBI for corporate corruption. SCOTUS declines to change double jeopardy laws. And speaking of Paul Manafort, the DOJ just craned him out of Rikers. Were it that all Rikers inmates were so lucky. Chalk one up, or I should say chalk two up, for Governor Nixon. Driver's licenses for undocumented and New Yorkers is for reals, and the New York Green Deal is on the brink of happening. Nevada sues opioid corporate conspirators, and emails prove that the Republican operative Hofeller talked with Commerce Department officials in Census Gate. And the number of federal workplace safety inspectors has dropped like a lead balloon or a lead anvil on your foot. And Justice Democrats behind a serious challenge to New York Congressman Elliot Engel. All this and more on today's program, ladies and gentlemen. We will dig into that over the coming days and weeks, the challenge to Elliot Engel. This is...
Very excited about that.
It would not only be an upgrade, a major upgrade in terms of getting a genuine progressive in that seat, but it is very much... one of those races that ends up creating a narrative or extending a narrative. If Justice Democrats, if the progressive wing of the Democratic Party can oust another established, very powerful Democrat, one who has been, in many respects, fairly regressive. This is going to have far greater implications than just this race. And certainly, I would imagine, both sides understand this. So this is going to be, there's going to be a lot of resources that go into that race. Far outsized resources than one would expect on that. Welcome to the program, ladies and gentlemen. It is mid-June. We've got graduations happening. I will not be here on Friday. I have an interview for you, though, on Thursday because I will not be here because my daughter is graduating middle school. If you can believe it, if you've been listening to this show since its inception, she and the show are almost the same age. And not this iteration of the show, but just sort of, I guess... my radio career, just to give you a heads up. Also, a reminder, You can support this program by becoming a member at jointhemajorityreport.com. Jointhemajorityreport.com. All right, let's get to this sound. We are sending 1,000 troops ostensibly to protect U.S. interests, which, of course, is an incredibly broad term. We mentioned this yesterday in our discussion in the wake of Tom Cotton calling for a military strike on Iran, having defined just about everything in the world as a U.S. national security interest. And we have now been told that the Trump administration will be sending another 1,000 troops, the Pentagon will be, via the acting Secretary of Defense, who is not quite the Secretary of Defense because his hearing has been put off because of an FBI investigation into possible corruption he's had with some corporate defense suppliers, just to, you know, put a cherry on top of this story. Supposedly, Donald Trump has told, said today that the attack on the tankers near the Strait of Hormuz was minor because he's now trying to downplay it. There is a fascinating battle that is going on in the Trump administration between the people that Donald Trump appointed to. This is the political appointees, right? I feel like there has been a precedent within American history, certainly, of career and military officials being more belligerent, perhaps, than the political appointees and politicians. There's certainly a narrative about this with JFK regarding the Soviet Union. Histories differ, but this is a situation where Trump's own appointees seem to be trying to push for war. Well, seem. They are trying to push for war with Iran by putting putting us in such close proximity to basically nurture a mistake that leads everybody to war, or over-aggressive responses by either side that leads us to war. And then you have people like Tom Cotton who are literally out there beating a drum for war. And then you have other people. I don't know how to really, where is Trish Regan in this? Someone is trying to talk to Donald Trump through Trish Regan, which leads me to believe that maybe it's Murdoch, whoever it is, knows that Trump watches Trish Regan on Fox Business. And here she is. She's going to talk slowly and she's going to talk rather insanely, but with a potentially good result, which is she is going to try and convince Donald Trump not to go to war because the Democrats want him to. Here it is.
There may actually be a whole lot of Americans whispering to the Iranians right now that they just need Trump out of the White House. And then the Democrats can reinstate that deal. Well, waiting for a new White House is just kind of dumb, on Iran's part anyway, because number one, despite recent polling, I suspect Trump just might get reelected. Number two, even if he doesn't get reelected, if the Iranians sit down at the table with the president now and negotiate something new, the Democrats aren't going to tear it up. You know, of course, that re-election thing is predicated upon a strong economy and peace. In other words, people like, Americans like that strong economy and peace, meaning no World War III or no prolonged military conflict with Iran. You know, but again, there are, remember, politically motivated, self-interested people everywhere, including in America. And there are people in America that would like nothing more than to see us engaged in a war with Iran because they know war could very well spell the end of Trump 2020.
Oh, no.
I mean, I love
great upshot
where this message lands. I would have done a slightly different delivery, one that didn't
but you
pretend
don't speak
like I
did. Trump.
But I don't speak Trump. But this is fascinating. I mean, I just don't know that there is a precedent. There may be some broad, like, you know, there may have been like, I don't know, Lippmann maybe, you know, would write things that maybe the president would read and it would give a sense of like where certain people.
Trish Regan but, is Donald Trump's Walter Lippmann.
I mean, I don't know. I'm trying to think of like, but also
there's
the fact that.
Democratic drift.
You know, John Bolton came from Fox. I mean, it's not like these people are not seeing each other at the commissary, as it were. It's very strange, but I would say to Trump, listen to Trish Regan. We should all have a Trish Regan in our lives who are telling us that Mike Pompeo and John Bolton are not to be trusted.
You know what? I'll take it.
Definitely. If it works. Trish, I don't want to break your heart. Hey, folks, do you love the thrill of an escape room? Looking for clues, solving puzzles, introducing Hunt a Killer. It's a monthly subscription game where you become a detective immersed in a murder mystery. This is nuts. It's crazy. It's great. Each month you'll receive crime scene photos, evidence, motive, and suspect information that you'll need to use to solve a crime. It's so interactive and convincing that it looks and feels real. You'll be racking your brain to solve the mystery and anxiously awaiting the next box of clues. It's perfect to play solo during date night or with friends or for a game night so you can swap theories. Folks, all the data shows the best way to expend your cash is on experiences. This is something you anticipate the box coming. You work it out, starting to slowly integrate Myla into this a little bit just to get her involved in something that actually makes her think. She's already like a big Law and Order fan now. It's very
really?
Strange.
Wow.
Yeah. You got to take what you look, you got to take it where it, you got to go with the flow with teenage
kids. No, I'm
going
to, I just have to say, I mean, I don't, Law and Order is incredibly popular across every single demographic imaginable.
Well,
my, what I'm saying, it's like, wow.
The point is anticipating the clues is almost as much fun as getting the clues, the actual getting of it. So this, the enjoyment lasts, it carries. I'm telling you, this like has sold me on the whole notion of experiential things versus just material, you know, getting, I don't know, a new whatever. Yeah, Millennial Sam.
It's about experience.
Right now, just for our listeners, you can go to huntakiller.com/majority for 20% off your first box. They only accept 200 members per day, so hurry to take advantage of this offer. That's huntakiller.com/majority for 20% off your first box. huntakiller.com/majority. And now, with that said, Saul is getting a new present. Because it's very difficult. Saul uses those spin brushes, and they're not terribly effective. But he wanted to have an electric toothbrush like Daddy has. And now he can. Quip. It's one of the first electric toothbrushes accepted by the American Dental Association. Quip can help pave the way to a healthier mouth and mind in just 2 minutes twice a day. Now, as you know, I have given Quip as a present to multiple people in my lives. My sister, completely unsolicited, texts me, I don't know, a couple of months ago, just got back from the dentist. The dentist is extremely pleased with me. So thank you. With Quip, brush heads are delivered on a dentist-recommended schedule of every 3 months for just $5. Quip provides a friendly reminder to stay committed to your oral health. I've told you guys this a million times. The whole key to an electric toothbrush is to use it. And Quip, because of the way it's designed, because it's portable, because it's doesn't need to be recharged, except for every 3 months, essentially. Easy to do. And now, The whole family can get refreshed with Quip thanks to the new Kids Quip, which has the same two-minute timer and guiding pulses as their original version. There are no childish gimmicks, just kid-friendly features like a small brush head, watermelon anti-cavity toothpaste, and rubber grip handles in colors little ones will love. I am so psyched about this. Because Saul has always wanted a toothbrush like mine, but the head is just too big for a kid that size. Now, boom. For all these reasons and more, that's why I love Quip. And with over 1 million happy, healthy mouths, do as well. Quip starts at just $25. And if you go to getquip.com/majority right now, you can get your first refill pack for free. That's your first refill pack for free at getquip.com/majority. Also, lastly, now the weather is warmer, it might be time to switch up your sheets and duvets to something a little breezier. From Brooklinen's newest linen collection, these beautiful airy linen pieces that give you and your bedroom a sort of a chic, relaxed feel while providing you with the ultimate comfort. And they're available in 12 beautiful patterns and colors. Brooklinen have been my sheets of choice now for like 3 years. I have multiple sets because of my strange living situation in the wake of We Nest. So I've got Brooklinen sheets at two different locations. Almost the only thing that me and the X could agree on were Brooklinen sheets. Now, of course, I like the crisper classic. I think it's called percale cotton. She likes the more sort of like luxurious version. But that said, we both agree on Brooklinen. It's in their name, so you know Brooklinen's newest linen collection is amazing. Like I said, I couldn't recommend their products more. Great for graduates, newlyweds, friends, family. Treat yourself to the bedroom upgrade you deserve. And now Brooklinen.com is giving my listeners an exclusive offer. Get 10% off and free shipping when you use promo code MAJORITY at Brooklinen.com. Brooklinen's so confident in their product, all their sheets, comforters, and towels come with a lifetime warranty. The only way to get 10% off and free shipping is to use promo code MAJORITY at Brooklinen.com. That's BROOKLINEN.com, promo code MAJORITY. Brooklinen, these are the best sheets ever. All right, going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to be talking to Anna Merlin about the Republic of Lies. We are back. Sam Cedar on the Majority Report on the phone. Pleasure to welcome to the program senior reporter at GO Media, that's formerly Gizmodo, Anna Merlin, author of Republic of Lies, American Conspiracy Theorists, and Their Surprising Rise to Power. Welcome to the program, Anna.
Thanks for having me.
So rise to power, you don't say.
Yeah, just a little bit.
I suppose we could start with the president, who was one of the chief purveyors, it seems to me, of the birther conspiracy about Barack Obama. But
right.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, I think people are probably familiar with his trajectory. But mm-hmm. but let's talk about, I mean, and I want to cover, I mean, obviously, we've talked on this program about Pizzagate, about Seth Rich, and certainly in terms of what you call Russiagate. But let's start with the overall perspective on conspiracies. I mean, this isn't the conspiracy theories. I mean, the existence of conspiracy theories, you write, is nothing new. What makes it different now?
So I think pointing out that Donald Trump's sort of rise to actual political prominence started with birtherism is important, because we saw the ways that he realized that using conspiracy theories was a way to create a base to appeal to the right wing. It was a way for him to, you know, create some measure of attention for himself. So what we've seen over the last few years is the idea, this resurgence of the idea that promoting conspiracy theories can sort of tie all these pretty strange disparate groups together and can give them some actual political influence in the mainstream.
So, I mean, and I guess it's a good time to address, like, whether, to what extent it's relevant. Mm-hmm. The propagators or the amplifiers of these conspiracy theories actually believe in them.
Right. Yeah, that comes up a lot, you know, when I talk to people about folks like Alex Jones, and I would argue that it doesn't really matter, you know, or this comes up a lot with Donald Trump specifically, is does he really believe this, or is he just making this claim, you know, for attention and for political gain? And what matters is that he's making it. What matters is that he and Alex Jones and other people are trying to promote these ideas, and in some cases have spent a really, really long time doing it. Or someone like Roger Stone, you know, who is a known sort of troll, you know, a self-described dirty tricks artist. It's unclear what Roger Stone or Donald Trump or Alex Jones believe in their heart of hearts, but we know what they spend their time doing and trying to promote.
So, man, but what is different about this era in terms of the salience of this? I mean, obviously, mm-hmm. you know, conspiracy theories, like we say, go back a long time, and they're not, you know, even pre-social media, right? They were there. I distinctly recall being in Gary Busey's house. It's a long story, but he had a series of VHS tapes. That were all about changelings in Mount Shasta. And
he
claimed that if we watched these, we would have to go into the witness protection program. Now, they were still shrink wrapped. He had not opened them himself, but they, you know, it was out there, like David Icke and that whole crew. Like what
David
is different?
Ike.
What's the difference now?
That's more self-control than I would have given Gary Busey. Good for him.
That was the best as he got, believe me.
So I think that, yes, we know that conspiracy theories are an element, especially of American society and around the world. But we also know that conspiracy theories are strongest typically among people who are disempowered or disenfranchised, to give people a way to explain systems that are not working well, forces that they feel arrayed against them, systems in the United States, like the healthcare industry, or the financial industry, that feel exploitative, or, you know, when people's favored political party is not in power, they tend to turn to conspiracy theories. What we're seeing right now is a resurgence of conspiracy thinking used by the hands of powerful people and the powerless alike. The other thing that we're obviously seeing is the rise of social media and the ways that social media allows the spread of conspiracy theories. And also, though I think this can be over-discussed to a degree, but organized troll organizations like the Internet Research Agency in Russia, or bots who can aid in the spread of conspiracy theories. So we're seeing this mixture of political influences and also sort of organic and inorganic means to spread conspiracy theories across social media. So we're seeing this really unholy confluence of stuff that is leading to the prominence and power and force of conspiracy theories in a way that we haven't seen for a really long time.
There's a lot to unpack there, but how much of the, I mean, you talk about the data shows that, you know, people who are just broadly powerless, I guess that can mean economically powerless, politically powerless, or even, I think, you know, sort of in some type of asymmetrical information dynamic, as it were. Mm-hmm. I mean, on some level, it strikes me as these things are like religions in some way, right? Like the people's ability to deal with modernity is just overwhelmed, and they turn to these things that are basically neatly describe what's going on.
Well, yes, I think they are a lot like religion. There are a lot of studies to show that the deeper somebody gets into conspiracy thinking, the more it sort of resembles religious faith. It actually, a lot of conspiracy theories, though, don't make things particularly neat or particularly tidy. You know, like the archetypal conspiracy image besides a tinfoil hat is that guy from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia standing in front of a bulletin board filled with photos, you know, tied together with red string, like a very chaotic image. You know, and so a lot of times conspiracy theories don't make a neat explanation, but what they do is they point really clearly at who to blame, who to be mad at. And that, in a way, is just as important for people as having a tidy narrative. A lot of conspiracy theories, you know, give people purpose and meaning to and direction to their lives, but they do it by creating a common enemy.
That's interesting. I mean, I guess it occurs to me, though, that is not neat with the different sort of like pictures, there is a sense that there is a neat explanation out there, right? It's
There's
just like
a
it's
sense,
a question of it's out there and we just got to find it. And which is also, I guess, sort of very much a religious exercise. But you also talk about there seems to be sort of, I guess, a various levels of, I mean, so much of this cuts like on multiple different planes, but there seems to be sort of like various levels of, I don't know if justification or legitimacy for pursuing conspiracy theories, but in the African American community, there's a burgeoning or has always been a market for conspiracy theories, largely because of some almost unbelievable things that have been done to that community. Discuss that part of it.
Yeah, I mean, I have a whole chapter in my book that's about conspiracy theories among Black Americans. And the reason why they are unique is because they tend to tie really directly to actual things that happen to Black people over the course of this country's history. So one thing that I talk about in a lot of detail is the idea that during Hurricane Katrina, the levees were bombed on purpose to drown Black neighborhoods on purpose and drive people out and rebuild the city, you know, in a way more amenable to wealthy white people. And so while we don't have any evidence that that happened, and there's a lot more evidence that the levees just failed, we do know that the levees just outside the city were purposely bombed during the Great Flood in the 1920s. And so the idea there is that a lot of conspiracy theories in the Black community tie indirectly to something that really did happen. You know, another really good example is that there's a lot of medical conspiracy theories, a lot of distrust. It's very hard to get people in the Black community to participate in medical trials for new drugs. And that is because of things like the Tuskegee experiment, where Black veterans who had syphilis were allowed to remain infected with syphilis for a very long time, long after the government knew what cured syphilis, because the government wanted to, you know, track the progression of the disease and see how it worked. And so there are all these examples of things that, you know, some number of Black Americans have come to believe because it is not that crazy to believe it. So this is really different than something like, say, QAnon or Pizzagate, where it has sort of less emotional and historical legitimacy and appeal.
I mean, so let's talk about like QAnon and Pizzagate and where that where those come from, because it's I mean, these are people theoretically in power on some level, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really, really important to sort of recognize that you know, both Pizzagate and QAnon are fundamentally Well, so Pizzagate arose during the 2016 elections, and it was promoted by people who wanted, who had a political reason to say that Democrats were part of a child sex trafficking ring happening in the basement of a pizza parlor. And Pizzagate was effective, and it was part of a number of strategies to, you know, try to create distrust and division and sort of smears. And then QAnon fundamentally is a conspiracy theory that Donald Trump is secretly doing a really good job, you know, and that his supporters, you know, only need to wait and soon he will, you know, arrest all the evildoers, finally put Hillary Clinton in jail. So at their core, they are an idea that there is this sort of secret, powerful group of sexual predators and that Donald Trump and people connected to Donald Trump are fighting them in secret.
I mean, this is where Jones, Alex Jones was too. I mean, there was a certain amount of pretzeling that had to happen, it seems to me, right? Because Alex Jones is like, you know, the globalists will never let Donald Trump take office, which was a great thing to say when you were like everyone else, assuming that Donald Trump is not going to win.
When
he wins, it completely undercuts the fact that there's this all-powerful cabal at the head of the world, essentially, because how could they possibly not be able to pick the American president? What's the point of it?
Yeah, well, that's where the deep state comes in. That's where the idea of a deep state comes in, that they, you know, tried mightily to prevent Donald Trump from winning. But when they couldn't prevent it, they then set themselves out to, you know, work for his destruction for his whole presidency. Right. But also, you'll notice that Alex Jones. So I had something in my book that we ultimately took out. But the day before Trump was inaugurated, Alex Jones recorded like a special episode of InfoWars. It sounded like he was on an airplane. And he's sort of like whispering hoarsely into his audio recorder and he's having a meltdown and he's saying, I know that the inauguration is not going to happen. You know, they're not going to let it happen. It's not going to take place. I wish I could tell you what I know. And then, of course, it's just never mentioned again, you know, that he's claiming to have evidence of this plot. But yeah, it's very confusing for people at some level who fundamentally believe themselves to be fighting this all powerful system from the outside and to realize, oh, wait, no, I suddenly have a much larger degree of power than I thought I did.
Do we have any sense of what of how you know, the I guess the followers of an Alex Jones, to what extent they would take him seriously, and to the extent that they did, like how did they deal with that? I mean, I know, like you know, I've seen research on Millenistic cults where, you know, the world's going to end on Tuesday, and then Tuesday comes, and the cult leader says, you know why it didn't is because Bernie wore shoes and you're not supposed to wear shoes. And so the new date is, you know, in 3 years, that type of thing.
Right. Right. I mean, I think that, you know, most people I've talked to and I've been to a lot of conspiracy related events. Most people tell me specifically that they take Alex Jones with a grain of salt, you know, and that they do their own research and that they find their own facts. But I think also it's really hard to underestimate the power of people to just sort of create new narratives as soon as the old one doesn't work out. You know, a lot of those doomsday cults that you reference, they don't disband the day after the world doesn't end.
Right.
That some of them hang on for years, you know? I mean, it's very hard to talk yourself out of an idea once that idea is in your head, and it's far easier to just sort of slightly rework it to make it more or less jibe with reality as you now see it.
Right, because none of this is really so much about the specific ideas themselves. It really has more to do with, I mean, do we have any data, or I mean, how do we understand who is susceptible to conspiracy theories, or is that really a wrong question?
So most people in the United States specifically believe in at least one conspiracy theory. 50% of us, one in three, most of us. So the type of conspiracy theory that you believe really has a lot to do with what your political and social and economic persuasions are. And also, like, in my experience, sort of how the systems of power in this country have treated you personally. Like, you and I are people who have some degree of power, of legitimacy. I don't think either of us have been particularly badly treated by the institutions in this country. So we have less need for conspiracy thinking. And that's a useful way to think about it, is what do conspiracy theories do for people? What do they provide in the face of their particular life circumstances?
And in the case of like, you know, sort of white supremacists, they are also developing theories to explain away like why they're not actually supreme.
Yeah. I mean, I think, again, this is where the idea of a deep state or a global cabal comes in, right? This idea that like they would be supreme genetically, they're supreme, but you know, because of these secret rulers of the world, they can't get ahead.
The Jews.
So,
you mean the Jews.
Yeah. The right. Jews, a lot of stuff about the Jews in there. It's amazing how often the Jews come up. And I do not just say this because I am Jewish and perhaps somewhat attuned to it, but really, you know, Kelly Wheel at the Daily Beast writes a lot about flat eartherism. And she noted something to me recently that I had also been seeing, which is that even flat earth communities eventually turn into like Holocaust denial. You know, like there are so many conspiracy communities where the terminal stop on the train is some form of anti-Semitism in ways that is really surprising.
At one point we have to wonder, like, is that a coincidence or is there something to that?
That's a good joke. I acknowledge
right.
your joke. I think that in reality, yeah, you're welcome. I think that in reality, it is very useful to have a group of evil outsiders who we blame for a myriad of world events. And when all else fails, we have the Jews for that.
Right.
You know, like it is one of the oldest and deepest sort of conspiratorial ideas. So it just fundamentally, it's still around because it's useful.
I mean, Jews end up being like the deus ex machina of all
yeah,
of these,
exactly.
of all of these things. When you've run out of being able to make any type of logical steps, the Jews step in to basically short circuit the thing.
Yeah, we do that. I mean, I always tell these guys that, and they're always guys that I end up talking to who are white supremacists, you know, you think about the Jews way more than I do. You know, like this is something that occupies you more, far more than it occupies me. But that's because, you know, it has a purpose for them.
Where does UFOs fit into this?
So belief in UFOs is one of the sort of oldest and widest spread subcultures in the United States. Like, certainly I believe in UFOs. I believe in the existence of aliens. And that's an okay thing for me to say. Right. You know, that's one of the conspiracy theories that I can cop to believing that won't immediately have you hanging up the phone or will prevent me from getting jobs. Right. But at the same time, you know, belief that the government is hiding what they know about aliens or UFOs or alien visitation, again, is pretty common because we know that the government has in the past covered up UFO research. Right. We found that out at the end of 2017, that there was a secret Department of Defense program that was studying UFO research. And we know that in the past, things, unexplained things have turned out to be research that the government was doing at Area 51, you know? So again, belief in UFOs is fundamentally hooked into some level of government distrust.
I want to also jump back a little bit too, in terms of another theme that seems to be run throughout a lot of this, and that's pedophilia.
Yeah.
I mean, certainly, I mean, and look, you know, I don't know if you're familiar that I've had a personal experience with Mike Cernovich.
Yeah, I saw that.
Who is, who, you know, was one of the promoters of Pizzagate, as you know, and there seems to be, and I wish I could say that it was just on the right, but I remember the Gannon Guckert conspiracy theory during the Bush years, which I don't know if
I don't know that one.
Oh, well, that is the one where there was a reporter, I use that in quotes, named Jeff Gannon, who was put in,
yes.
And I can't remember by the name of the press guy, but it turned out that they found that Gannon had no real press credentials. He just worked as an escort at one point. I think it was
yeah.
he would get into a military outfit. And was a male escort. And then suddenly he ends up with a website and having access to the president to ask questions. And then there became this huge thing that his name was not really Jeff Gannon. It was Guckert. And he had been kidnapped and had been like in the attic of the White House since the first Bush administration as a child, you know, basically trafficked kid, you know, yes. in a part of a pedophile ring.
Right.
And it didn't get the prominence that, you know, something like Pizzagate would, because maybe there wasn't social media in the same way. But
right.
But what is that?
So it's a couple things. Again, it does actually tie back to anti-Semitism. The idea of the blood libel, right, is a literally medieval idea, which is that Jews were meeting in secret to ritually abuse Christian children and then kill them, right, to use their blood for matzah. And so the idea that your political enemies or opponents are not just evil, but are child abusers and are meeting in secret to abuse children ritually is very old. It's a medieval idea. And it also now does a couple things. It justifies any kind of action against your perceived enemy, right? Because if they're abusing children, what could be worse than that? And so it kind of justifies anything that you might want to call for. You know, I hear a lot of people, you know, all but calling for someone to be murdered when they are accusing them of being a pedophile, a secret ritual abuser, because, you know, that type of language is considered to be acceptable when we're talking about those people. But it also is something that a lot of folks are able to do because there is so much actual predation and rape and sexual abuse in the world. You know, I write about this a little bit in the book, but, you know, I cover sexual violence quite a bit. I write frequently for Gizmodo Media's feminist website, Jezebel. And one thing that happened is that the Pizzagate folks were very excited when the Me Too movement started, because for them, Harvey Weinstein being a secret, extremely prolific rapist was proof. It was proof that there is this incredibly powerful cabal that does ritually abuse people.
I mean, there does seem to be some type of crossover. I think it was Corey Feldman was, you know, in the news for a while for basically revealing that he had been abused.
Right.
And I don't know how that, you know, to what extent that was substantiated. But I mean, some of this, you know, I guess you get that story of R. Kelly and all of a sudden a lot of this sounds like it's right. all very possibly true.
Yeah. And again, actually, allegations like that are specifically against like famous people or people in Hollywood get trotted out over and over by the sort of QAnon and Pizzagate crowds, because, again, it's seen as proof that extremely wealthy people are able to cover up horrifying abuse, which actually, you know, is true. Like, we know that that's true. You only have to read the details of the sweetheart deal that Jeffrey Epstein got to know that people who are actual, you know, abusers of children do occasionally get away with it if they have enough money and power and influence. So, yeah, you know, I mean, that's sort of the tricky thing about a lot of conspiracy theories, is that the ways that they hook into actual reality can be incredibly complicated, and it makes it really hard to dismiss a lot of things outright.
Let's talk about the deep state and Russia gate. What is your sense of how that breaks down?
Right. So essentially, my argument was, you know, Russia gate was a group of people on the left, but not just on the left, you know, who fundamentally became not just never Trumpers, but people who decided that Donald Trump was actually a Manchurian candidate, right? That he had been installed by his boss, Putin, and that he was sort of knowingly subverting American democracy. And what was so interesting to me about that is that that accusation very much mirrored accusations that conservatives made about President Obama during his presidency. So the idea that the office of the presidency has been subverted by a foreign enemy, you know, and has been taken over from within is not like uncommon. It's not a new accusation, but the ways that it sort of manifested in Russiagate were a little bit different, because we had people like Louise Mensch, you know, making these extremely sort of colorful claims about exactly who was doing the colluding or the subverting. And again, it was something that hooked into actual reality. We know that elements of the Russian government did try to influence the U.S. elections, and they did offer help to the Trump campaign. So again, this wasn't something that was completely out of nowhere. And then the deep state conspiracy theories almost arose like in opposition to that, where the narrative on the right was, no, there is no Russiagate, there is no conspiracy, there is no collusion. Instead, there is this powerful group of anti-Trump forces working within the government for his destruction, these unelected You know, holdovers was one more mild word they used, you know, these unelected people working in the government for his destruction. And again, there was an unprecedented number of leaks from the Trump White House. And there was somebody who we still don't know who wrote an op-ed in the New York Times saying, I work for the Trump administration and I'm trying to prevent him from carrying out his worst impulses. So both of those things had elements of truth within them, and they built up this sort of, it's like a pearl, you know, there's this tiny little gritty, dirty core of truth, and this giant, much more politically useful thing accretes around it in a way that people can use and spread and share that makes political and social sense to them.
So, I mean, what do we do about this? I mean, is there, I mean, and is that even the right question to ask, I guess? I mean, because it seems like there's always going to be conspiracies, and certainly there always has been conspiracies. There's always going to be these deficits of power. Well, not necessarily these deficits of power, but there's always going to be some deficit, it seems to me, of information, right? You know, even to the extent of like the reason why Louise Mensch was able to create a sort of fantastical version of to the extent of what we know went down between the Russians and the Trump campaign, the fantastical version existed because the results of the investigation was not back yet. Right.
Right. I mean, exactly.
And
yeah.
And that shouldn't have happened any other way, frankly, terms of, but what do we do about this? And what's the sort of, I guess, the danger?
Mm-hmm. I mean, I have a couple answers. I have the sort of more optimistic one, and then I have my actual feeling. The optimistic one is that
this is the one for the book tour, and then the
Then the actual sort of, so the optimistic version is that if we build a more just and transparent society, conspiracy theories sort of take care of themselves. They're always going to exist. They're always going to be there. That's fine. Like, we have a vibrant, free, open discourse, and that's great. And that means that we are always going to have guys at conventions selling Bigfoot literature or, you know, stuff about the JFK assassination. Like, that's just a thing that's always going to happen. But we know that societies where there is a higher degree of transparency, where there's less economic inequality, where there's more trust in the press and the media, we see less sort of damaging conspiracy theorizing that kind of divides people and makes it hard to agree on any sort of concrete, tangible truths, right? And so my less optimistic response is that I think that if we were going to do any of that, we needed to do it about 30 or 40 years ago, you know? And so now we have an American populace specifically who knows that the government, particularly the CIA and the FBI, have engaged in horrifying human rights abuses in the past, are probably capable of doing it again in the future. And we have an incredibly efficient social media machine that allows for the spread of conspiracy theories and hateful ideas at a volume that has really never been seen before in human history. We have a conveyor belt. And so even these sort of delayed responses trying to get it under control are probably not enough. So my actual answer is I don't know if it's really possible to pull us back.
So speaking to the less optimistic you, the idea was that technology has moved too far ahead of our of where we were positioned to basically deal with it. In other words, we needed to fix this stuff before. I guess we needed to fix the brakes before we got on the hill or going down.
Yeah,
the hill.
I think that would have been good. I think that would have been beneficial.
I wonder also to what extent corporate malfeasance also adds to this, because I mean, I spend a decent amount of time going to plaintiff attorney conferences, and when you hear what corporations are knowingly doing, what individuals in these corporations are knowingly doing, the choices that they knowingly make that are almost, even though the lawyers have seen this in black and white in the, you know, via discovery through emails or through reports, it makes you think that anything horrible is possible.
Yeah. And this comes up a lot, especially in the environmental movement, right? As there are so many examples of incredibly poor regulation of companies, you know, dumping massive amounts of pollutants into the water and giving people cancer and then denying it for years and years and years. So yeah, there's a lot of very real sort of knowledge that corporations can't be trusted to police themselves, that they will do really evil things for as long as they get away with it, and that our government has, you know, utterly failed to address that problem. So that comes up a lot for me when I'm talking to people in the anti-vaccine movement, right?
That's what I was going to say, exactly.
Yeah, so I was just at an anti-vaccine conference that I got thrown out of, unsurprisingly. You know, but people always say the same thing to me, which is they say, how can you trust Monsanto? How can you trust Merck? And I say, well, I don't have to trust them to trust the science of vaccines, which is much broader than just the claims that those companies make. But again, this is another place where our sort of knowledge of American history and the sort of tilted wheel of how corporations work vis-a-vis the government really damages public trust.
Right. I mean, there's a lot of examples, sadly, of, you know, of the FDA allowing stuff that is not healthy.
Yes.
Or they don't even have they're not in a position to make that determination.
Yeah.
And yeah. And then the transparency, of course, in the context of the anti-vax stuff is the vaccination courts that exist that I think most people aren't aware of. They make sense, but when people find out about them, they're like, "Wait, what?"
Yeah, and the interesting thing about the vaccine injury compensation system in this country is that it exists because there were so many lawsuits, especially following the controversy over DTaP, that the government recognized that they had to come up with a way to redress and reimburse parents whose children did suffer an actual adverse vaccine reaction. They had to do it in a way that drug companies wouldn't stop making vaccines, because that's where we were heading, is that drug companies were getting so frightened of these lawsuits that they were just going to pull out of the vaccine market, because drug companies are value neutral and they don't care about whether or not people get measles or pertussis. They care about making money. But yeah, the existence of the vaccine injury court system and the fact that it's a no-fault system, the fact that it's a system that doesn't require drug companies to admit wrongdoing, is, again, something that makes people crazy. It gives people cause for so much suspicion. So again, there's so many things about the way that this country is set up that feeds these things in people's brains, rightly or wrongly.
It seems to me it would make a lot more sense if we were making our own vaccines
as a home
government. And,
oh, yeah.
Well, I mean, certainly, you know, where we have control over the quality of the vaccinations. I was talking to somebody in April about, you know, cancer medication that had been tainted by jet fuel in China. But we're the American government to make vaccinations, to be the actual producer of these things. It would change the dynamic dramatically, it seems to me.
Sure. But it wouldn't necessarily change the conspiracy theorizing, because then it would be, you know, whatever goes in the vaccines is going in there to make us docile as a population. Right.
Like, but that's different. That's different from what the construct of the anti-vaxxers is today, right? The anti-vaxxers today, their construct, it seems to me, is the companies stand to lose too much money to change the formulations and whatever. They use additives in there that keep it fresh or something that, you know, end up creating a problem. I mean, in the early aughts, the idea that thimerosal could have been an additive that was causing this seemed to be still scientifically credible. The problem is for those people like those theories.
Oh my goodness! Sorry about that.
That's all right.
They're coming to get
you. They're coming to get you.
Yeah.
Thimerosal was taken out of the vast majority of these vaccinations. I think it was around 2003 and
2001. I think it was, but yeah,
We saw no discernible impact on things like autism rates.
Right. No, I mean, the fact remains too that the government and the United States have a really robust oversight of vaccines. It is not in anybody's interest for vaccines to make people sick. And even thimerosal, which is a preservative and was not proven to have any ill health effects at all, was taken out of childhood vaccines, most childhood vaccines, other than some multi-batch flu vaccines, because the government didn't want people to stop vaccinating. This is another place where paranoia and suspicion fed into government action, because the idea was we have to do whatever we can to keep people vaccinating because that's the most important thing to public health. But yeah, I mean, it is really, really difficult at this point to figure out what would sort of get the anti-vaccine movement in particular to slow down. And I think we're seeing, you know, recently that it is really, it is working. The uptick in measles cases across the world is evidence that it is working.
Right. Working in not a good way.
Right. Yeah.
Anna Merlin, the book is Republic of Lies, American Conspiracy Theorists and Their Surprising Rise to Power. Thanks so much for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
All right, folks. Time to head to the fun half. The number there, 646-257-3920. As you know, just a reminder, this program, this is no conspiracy, relies on your support for its existence. There's many dark forces out there trying to come after us. And your support provides us the top security that we need, obviously, and the countermeasures that we need to take. I'm not going to say any more, obviously. Why would I?
We are in an info war.
Totally impromptu. You can become a member by going to jointhemajorityreport.com. Also, don't forget justcoffee.coop. Fair trade coffee, tea, chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY. Get 10% off. You can buy the Majority Report blend. Check it out. I guess we're a couple of weeks away from making a new exciting announcement. So we'll wait. And we won't do it. Reminder, next week, Wednesday and Thursday nights, we will be doing live coverage of the Democratic debates. And so join us live. We will be doing that. In the meantime, today is...
Daddy's not available.
What's that?
Daddy is not available.
Well,
it's debate night.
Debate night. Exactly. Michael, tonight is Tuesday night.
Yes, indeed.
So
we will be focusing on the role that vaccines played in Brexit, how they've damaged our cognitive capacity, what the industry does not want you to know. No, we're not going to be talking about that. Yeah, it's possible. Well, tonight on TMBS, we are going to be doing a lot of things, probably with a pretty heavy emphasis on what's going on with Iran. And a little, not huge, but we're going to be experimenting with a little bit of a different format tonight because, you know, we have crew of about probably a little over a dozen great people from, say, Milton Alamadi or Richard Wolff or Anna Kasparian. But tonight, Alona Minkowski, who's a regular on crew, is actually going to be a semi-recurring co-host of TMBS and lead her own segment as an example. So I'm looking forward to that. Which one? You like that? That amused you?
Yeah, the wow did.
The wow did. Okay. So fair enough. I'm glad you're enjoying yourself. So that's tonight. Looking forward to that with Alona live at 7 o'clock.
Da-da. Charge.
That one was better. We're going to be at live at... I actually use that one, I feel like. Yeah. I like that one. We're going to be live 7 p.m. NYC time, Michael Brooks Show YouTube channel. And then this weekend, we're going to be doing actually a deep dive on the history of the Democratic Party from a little bit of a different angle. We're going to loop it back specifically with the Rainbow Coalition.
Back to Sam Cedar.
With Ryan Grimm, patreon.com/TMBS. Subscribe on the Michael Brooks Show on YouTube as well. We're about to hit our first 52,000 subscribers.
Only God, no other king.
You correlating that with getting back to Sam Cedar?
No, that was only one,
one king.
That was your subscribers thing on YouTube. Jamie, go ahead.
This week on the Antifada, we have Sophie Wiener, night editor of Splinter News and displaced poster. That's right. She's a refugee from the posting wars who had to move to Australia after getting ratioed. Just kidding. She was back in town for a bit. So we talked about Australia. We checked in on our favorite media power couple, Barry and Bill Weiss-Marr. And mostly, we talked about a very cool socialist techno zine that Sophie started with her friend Zoe Beery, and just like the liberatory potential of underground culture and how we can maybe create some kind of opening to make the world better by having a lot of fun on the weekend.
Literary Hangover coming up this Saturday, recording on Thursday night. Blithedale Romance by Nathaniel Hawthorne. It's about the utopian socialists, and we talk about Hawthorne as an anti-communist writer.
All right. 646-257-3920 is the number. See you in the fun half. Let's try that one more time.
Is best.
Jamie and I may have a disagreement.
Yeah, you can't just say whatever you want about people just because you're rich.
I have an absolute right to mock them on YouTube.
He's up there buggy whipping like he's the boss.
I am not your employer.
You know, I'm tired of the negativity.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to upset you. You're nervous, you're a little bit upset, you're riled up.
Yeah, maybe you should rethink your defense of that, you fucking idiots.
We're just going to get rid of you.
All right.
But dude.
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 You want to smoke this joint?
Yes.
Do you feel like you are a dinosaur?
Some good shit.
Exactly. I'm happy now.
It's a win-win.
It's a win-win-win.
Hell yeah.
Now listen to me. 2, 3, 4, 5 times. 847-906-501-457. 2, 38, 56, 27. 1/2, 5/8, 3.9 billion.
Wow.
He's the ultimate math nerd,
don't you see?
Why don't you get a real job instead of spewing vitriol and hatred, you left-wing Limbaugh?
Everybody's taking their dumb juice today.
Come on, Sammy.
Dance, dance, dance.
Ooh. Rand Paul.
I had my first post-coital scene with a woman. I'm hoping to add more moves to my repertoire. All I have is the dip and the swirl.
Fine, we can double dip.
Yes, this is a perfect moment.
No.
Wait, what?
You make under $1 million a year. You're scum. You're nothing.
Excuse me? Fuck you, you fucking liberal elite. I think you belong in jail.
Thank you for saying that, Sam. You're a horrible, despicable person.
All right, gonna take a quick break. I want to take a moment to talk to some of the libertarians out there. Take whatever vehicle you want to drive to the library. What you're talking about is jibber jab.
Classic. I'm feeling more chill already.
Good.
Donald Trump can kiss all of our asses.
Hey, Sam. Hey, Andy. You guys ready to do some evil?
Hitler was such an idiot.
I think I might be a Nazi.
Agree.
No.
Death to America.
You.
Yes.
Wow.
Wow, that's weird. No way! Unbelievable. This guy's got a really good hook.
Throw our hands up.
Ooh. Wow.
But Sam, I gotta get off.
No worries. Let's I wanna just flesh this out a little bit. I mean, look, it's a free speech issue. If you don't like me...
Hey, shut up!
Thank you for calling into the Majority Report. Sam will be with you shortly. America.